Hey, yo, everybody, welcome in to the Lakers Collective. I couldn't decide which one I was going to go with there.
It's just become a thing now. It's just a thing.
I've already got something planned for next week, but we'll leave that one until then. Happy to see y'all here. Make sure you do hit the subscribe button if this is your first time here over on the Lakers Collective. Don't forget to find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts as well. I'm Trevor Lane. He's Jason Tipp, Jovan Buha. We're here to talk some Lakers basketball with y'all today. Lots of stuff for us to get into. We're going to talk about if the Lakers are contenders in the Western Conference, and if not, what do they need to do in order to get there? How do they really stack up against the West? I'm sure we'll touch a little bit on the Lakers matchup with the Jazz coming up this evening. Both sides will be shorthanded in that one. And LeBron, Luka, Austin, how do they look as a trio? And, of course, we'll be taking your questions and comments. Guys, how you doing?
What's up, guys? It's good to see you. I'm excited about today in particular because we've always had a game to react to, which games are like stories. You always are digging into all the different plot lines and things that happen over the course of a game. Today, we get to zoom out and actually just like talk about the basketball team at large. And I think that's, you know, I like that it's right around the third, you know, one third of the way through the season. It's like a good time for us to just kind of take a step back and see how these guys stack up.
I'm doing well. It's been too long since we've had Lakers basketball. It's been a few days. Before that, it was a few days. So excited for them to get back into a more regular schedule. But to Jason's point, also happy to take a step back and take a big picture look at the team right now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's been a strange schedule lately, and that's because of the NBA Cup tournament. And you can't help but feel like, man, those stretches where there were, you know, five games in four nights or whatever earlier on in the season, could you have lightened up the schedule a little bit at some points? Because now we've got so many days off here for this stretch. But nonetheless, I think it was much needed for the Lakers as a team, and maybe to their benefit, given that Austin Reeves, you know, was out for a week here. He's going to be out for tonight's game. Gives him a little bit of time to heal up during a less heavy part of the schedule. But let's jump right into it. Once again, chat, we're going to be taking your questions and comments throughout this show. We'll be getting into it. But are the Lakers contenders? I guess let's just start there, and I'm sure there's a simple answer, but a lot more to get into. Jason, let's start with you. Are the Lakers contenders, as they presently sit?
So I think the short answer is yes. The longer answer is, you know, how are we defining contender in terms of, like, does this team have a chance? Yeah, of course they have a chance. I think there are certain things you have to have in order to have a chance. I think you have to have one of the top-tier superstars. Unless you're, like, overwhelmingly talented, a la like the 2024 Boston Celtics. But like, you essentially have to have one of those top tier guys. If you look back, like, it's Shea last year, it's Jokic in 2023, it's Steph in 2022, it's Giannis, it's LeBron, it's Kawhi. You know, you go back, it's always one of those dudes. The Lakers clearly have one of those dudes. I think he's been the third best player in the league this year, Luka Doncic. I think he's clearly been behind Shea and Jokic, but I don't think you can argue anyone else above him in that number three spot. We're going to talk more about them individually as players, the stars, later on, so I won't dig into Luka right now. But I think you have to have one of those guys, and they do. I think you have to have an elite unit. Like, I think you got to have a thing on the court that you do better than everybody or better than most teams. And the Lakers are one of three teams in the league that have been elite half-court offenses, like transcendently good half-court offenses: Denver, Oklahoma City, and the Lakers. Now, their actual full offensive rating gets a little more complicated because they don't score much in transition, and we could talk about that in a second. But I do think they have like some basic checkpoints. Like, they do have a legitimate top tier superstar, and they have a thing that they do better than most teams, and that's score in the half court. The main problem is margin. There's this little like screen on the NBA.com website when you're sorting through their stats under teams. You can click miscellaneous. And what I like about it is it basically just grabs all the margin stats and puts them on one screen. So the three that are next to each other there are points off of turnovers, second chance points, and fast break points scored. And the Lakers have a negative margin in all three of those areas. And that really is the main concern. When you're already essentially a bottom 10 defense, and then you compound that with the fact that you're negative in all three margins, that just makes it so that you have to be so transcendently great in those other areas. And unfortunately, there's going to be two teams in the West that are going to have a better player than Luka in Oklahoma City and in Denver. And the Lakers are also, you know, in terms of their half-court offense, They're as good as those teams, but they're not better than those teams. And so it just gets, the margins get a little thin for them. Their margin for error gets a little thin because they don't make up ground in those other parts of the game. And that really is the main goal for this team the rest of the season, whether it's accomplished through trade, whether it's accomplished through better habits, whether it's just Luka taking better care of the basketball or whatever it ends up being. There's a combination of things they're going to have to do to generate more margin so that they can use their offense to push them over the top.
I agree on the margin stuff. That's interesting that you've got the Lakers as a contender. I don't, and I'm usually more on the optimistic side. Jovan, before I get into why, Jovan, where do you stand? Are the Lakers a contender or not?
I have them as a fringe contender. So I just did my contender rankings on my channel last week, and I had the Lakers fifth overall. The issue for them is that three of the four teams ahead of them are in the West. And the team I had sixth was San Antonio, who had just blown the Lakers out and then now just beat OKC and, yes, lost in the NBA Cup championship to New York. But I thought was better than New York for going on like three plus quarters of that game. They just had a rough fourth quarter, did not execute. And that could be a learning experience for San Antonio. But like, I think if you want to put San Antonio ahead of the Lakers, I think that's its own conversation here, where seeing those two teams match up last week closer to full strength on both sides and seeing what San Antonio just did to OKC. As of right now, I would still put the Lakers like slightly ahead of them. But if you want to argue for that, and there's a clear statistical case right now for San Antonio ahead of LA, they've been better than them on both sides of the ball. So that is its own thing. But I think for the Lakers, I say fringe contender because, I think if you're like fifth or sixth and you have a top three player in the league, I have to give you some puncher's chance to, like, I think there's a pathway, but to me, it's probably more of like a 2019 Blazers or 2023 Lakers, where you need a certain bracket. Maybe it ends up like somehow Denver and Houston are like the 4 or 5 and OKC is the 1. And now all three of those teams are on the other side. Maybe it's the Lakers as the 2 seed, San Antonio as the 3 seed. Like, that's like conceivable, but that is a very narrow path. I say fringe because I also think like if the Lakers make some rotation changes, which we can go to the starting group. I think it's really interesting. Like, looking at their four most played lineups on the season, three of them are negative actually, and all three of them are -8 or worse in terms of points per 100 possessions. So three of their four most played lineups this season are getting just shellacked, and it's actually four of their top six as well, if you keep extending the sample size. So like, relatively small sample size within that, but they do have this like odd dichotomy here where a lot of their lineups are either like, the Lakers are the kings of runs, right? Like, they're going on these big runs with certain groups, and then they're getting absolutely hammered with other groups. And like, I don't think JJ has a great pulse right now on the rotation and the optimal way to play certain lineups. And I think it starts with a starting change, but then I also think we saw the value of having Jared Vanderbilt in the rotation and playing some of those Banshee guys and leaning into that identity a little bit more and being like, okay, yes, the offense is going to take a hit. The offense wasn't as good against Phoenix, but the defense was much better. And I think they still have to find that balance. And then the other thing that we've talked about a million times has been like, they need to make a trade, right? So I think they are fringe contenders right now. I'd probably put them fifth or sixth. If they can fix the starting group, if they can fix some of the rotations and make a trade, I think they could vault into maybe as high as like the third spot. I don't know if they go like maybe second, but probably third. So I'm like, they're a fringe contender with upside, but it is contingent on JJ making some changes that he has been reluctant to make and them also making a trade.
So I think we're ultimately not all that far off, the three of us. Where I'm at is that, as I would put them in, if I had to pick one or the other, I would say no, they're not a contender right now. I look at their net rating overall, and I know they're a good fourth quarter team. But I look at the net rating, it is what it is. They've got a worse net rating than the Golden State Warriors, who have been mired in a season that's not been super fun for them. They have a worse net rating than the Cleveland Cavaliers. They're very middle of the pack in terms of that. Their defensive rating sits 20th right now in the NBA. Their offensive rating is 7th. I think there is upside, but I don't think you go very far in the playoffs with a 20th rated defense. You've got to get significantly better there. Now, while I have them not as a contender right now, I think the path is there for them to get to that point, because I do think, as Jovan's mentioning, there are some changes that can be made both internally with the team as well as externally on the trade front that would really pay dividends. I think there is a pathway for this to be a legitimate top five, maybe top three offense in the NBA. I think there is a pathway if you're able to add a piece or two to really up what this team can be defensively. But as they presently sit right now, if you were to throw them into the playoffs, I do think there's too many defensive weaknesses currently for this group. Not a surprise. We knew coming into the season that they would have some defensive deficiencies, but on top of that, Jason was talking about the margins. That's what troubles me, is that they have yet to figure out how to win in the margins. I think I talked about this on our last show, but over the last five games or so, they've actually gotten a hold of one of my bigger pet peeves of the season, which has been the turnovers, but there's been a coinciding drop in how often they've forced turnovers from their opponents. So the net result hasn't been much change there. I think that they've got to get a little bit better in a number of different areas that can help you win games. We typically look at the three-point volume, three-point percentage. JJ has asked for a few more threes being taken. We needed to keep an eye on the turnovers, of course. The rebounding has been generally good on the defensive glass. Can they get a bit better on the offensive end? I think there's some little things here and there that they can do to take steps forward, but I have them as not a contender currently with a path to getting there. That's ultimately where I land with this group. And actually, guys, I'm surprised, because I'm typically the more optimistic about this team, but I just think there's enough holding them back right now that I can't put them in that tier.
Well, it gets complicated, because it's how you define contender. So
exactly.
To me, there's can you win a championship? And then do you have a good chance to win a championship? I think there are three teams this year that have a good chance to win a championship: Oklahoma City, Denver, and Houston. Those are the three teams where I'm sitting in that locker room with a lot of belief that we can get this thing done. Whereas you ended that into that second tier, and it's I think the Knicks are in this group. I think it's Lakers, Wolves, Spurs, that group that you get into that second tier. Those are all teams that certainly can win a championship, but now we're talking it's just a long shot. But I still think they're contenders in that purest sense of the word, because in the same way that the Lakers have these big question marks surrounding their defense, the Spurs have big question marks. You want to know how they lost to the Knicks? Their half-court offense fell apart in the fourth quarter there, and there's some reasons for that. They have some young guards that aren't as efficient as a Jalen Brunson, and they've got a superstar that can be pushed off his spot and that has been struggling to score since he came back from his injury. And so all these teams have issues. It's just, to me, there's tiers. I think there's a clear top three and there's a pretty big drop off after that. But all those other teams, I think it'd be foolish for us to pretend Minnesota can't win a championship. Of course they can. It's a long shot, but of course they can. Just like the Lakers, just like the Spurs, just like all of these teams that are in that second tier.
Do you see long shots often win championships in the NBA?
No, of course not. But what about Golden State was theoretically somewhat of a long shot in 2022. You know, it does happen. It does.
2011 Mavs come to mind as a team that people, I think they were three or four seed, if I'm not mistaken. And I think most people had the Lakers or the Thunder beating them along the way. And then obviously Miami in the finals.
The Pacers were one win away last year. No one saw them on the radar. The Mavs were three wins away. There were some people that were high on the Mavs, but the Mavs were very much a second tier contender at that point in time. It does happen. It's rare, and I think it's worth pointing out that it's rare, but yeah, it does happen.
It does. And look, that's the why they're long shots, right? But in order for me to put them in, and you're right, there's a little bit of just what do you consider a contender? I need to feel like the Lakers are on the same level as Denver and Houston, and I just don't have them in that tier right now for me to put them into that category. So can they, and I think we're all basically in agreement, even if we want to change how we define contenders, what do they do to get there? Is there realistic trade potential to get them there? In addition to, as Jovan mentioned, tweaking the rotations, how the team's being used, things of that nature. Is that path a realistic one to where we can see post All-Star break, post trade deadline, all that, the Lakers are heading into the playoffs, playing basketball at the level of, I don't want to say OKC, but Denver, Houston, those two?
Yeah, so I think like there's an internal improvement element, and then I think there's the trade element to look at. And the internal improvement element, I think, really comes down to their three stars. Like, so for instance, Luka is averaging the second highest most turnovers per game of his career. Mm-hmm. I was looking at some stats on Synergy because I was putting something together for a social, but just to give you guys some perspective, Shai turns the basketball over on about 7% of his possessions, according to Synergy. Luka turns the ball over on almost 13.5% of his possessions, according to Synergy. So like he's got a turnover rate on like a per possession basis that's almost double what Shai's is. And there's a lot of like basic stuff there with like how bad the Lakers are in transition defense off of live ball turnovers, where like if Luka can trim the fat there and turnovers, that helps the team a lot. Luka's missing about 62% of his pull-up jump shots so far this season. If he can clean that up a little bit by limiting some of his three-point attempts, he's been very efficient on twos inside of 17 feet. Like he's shooting 60% on floaters, he's shooting 50% on short twos, but once he gets outside of that range, the percentage plummets. So like tweaking his shot profile a little bit, Luka gets a little better. We've talked about Austin and his floor. I don't want to get too in depth on the stars because we can talk about that later on in the show, but LeBron's got to get closer to that all NBA level. Austin's got to have a higher floor. Like all of those things will help internally. Like they've got to get one of these role players to become a consistent shooter. I don't know if that ends up being a Marcus Smart or a Jake LaRavia or who it ends up being, but one of those dudes needs to be able to knock down a corner three at a higher percentage than what they've been knocking down this season. Like those are basic bits of internal improvement. The trade piece of it to me is not so much about their ceiling. It's more about their margins. Like having a really good 6'8 athlete that can start for them and or two additional fringe rotation, like seventh, eighth man type of athletes that can come in and provide athletic support, that will make you better in the points off a turnover margin. That will make you better in the second chance points margin. That will make you better in the fast break points margin just by a little bit. So basically shrinking those gaps a little bit. I almost look at that piece as more of like the trade piece is like makes them a little bit better everywhere. Whereas whether or not this team becomes the unguardable half-court offense that we know they have to be if they're going to hoist the trophy is more of a Luka, Austin, LeBron thing.
Yeah, I pretty much echo everything Jason said. I think the goal should be, in my opinion, to acquire the fifth starter who like right now, I think in some ways it's nice to have the flexibility and the versatility to go to a few different looks to close a game. I think if there were a game 7 tomorrow for the Lakers, I think we know who would probably be closing in JJ's view, right? And maybe there's a little bit of an argument there for Rui versus Marcus, but I think JJ has telegraphed like how he generally views the roster, the rotation, certain lineups, and I think we know how that would go. But you know, I continue to sound the alarm of like, I think the starting group and their struggles are emblematic of the team's struggles overall. Like to Trevor's point earlier, there's no real statistical argument for the Lakers as contenders other than the record and like some of the clutch stuff. But like in terms of net rating, which is typically one of the prominent numbers that you look at in terms of a team's ability to contend and just how good a team is, like they are closer to league average than they are to being, I mean, they're 14th on NBA.com, 13th in cleaning the glass. So it's like, either way, that's not good enough. And that's not anywhere close to good enough. So I think it has to start with like the rotation. And we now have seen, like they typically need, they need a stopper in a lineup, right? Like, so I think it starts with Marcus as a starter. And then with some of the bench groups, I think you could go with some combination of Gabe, probably a couple guys, but like Gabe, Jake, Vando, two of those three together. And you kind of build out the rotation from there, because I think there needs to be a certain baseline level of defensive capability with this group. And I think they've front loaded the starting group with all of the offense and very little defense. And then they bring in the Banshees, and then typically, again, they lose the starting minutes and then they start winning these bench minutes. But it's like if you just fix kind of the core problem from the beginning, I don't think you're dealing with this. Because, again, if you look at OKC, Houston, Denver, and I think even now San Antonio is starting to kind of figure out their best five-man group. I think all four of those teams have better five-man units than the Lakers at like their core. And if it's like 5 minutes, who, like, yes, the Lakers have been impeccable in the clutch, but if you put them in a 5 minute situation against any of these four teams right now, I would pick any of these four teams against them. So I think like that's the thing that they have to figure out. And I think it partly starts internally, and then there has to be a trade for that fifth player. And if that fifth player just isn't available, if like Herb Jones is the only guy that maybe checks that box, but they want two picks and you just can't get him, then that's a different conversation in terms of like, maybe you stand pat and look more toward next offseason or next season. But as constructed, the Lakers are I think kind of shooting themselves in the foot to start games. And again, even not even just the starting group, because it's three of their top four lineups are getting killed. And I think there needs to be, like, you know, JJ referenced yesterday at practice, a small sample size. We need 250 minutes for lineups. And I totally get that. But just from like a logic and lineup construction perspective, I think a lot of the lineups right now are just not making sense, in my opinion. And even with the small sample size we have, they're getting killed. And I think they're winning right now in spite of that.
To your point, the three lineups that you're talking about, three of the top four via cleaning the glass, they're all defensively deficient. The Luka, Austin, Rui, LeBron, Ayton lineup, which is the starting lineup right now, is minus 10 in 164 possessions. They rank in the 20th percentile defensively. That lineup, Luka, Gabe, Austin, Rui, and Ayton, is in the second percentile defensively. They're getting lit up. And then Luka, Smart, Laravia, Rui, and Ayton, maybe a little bit surprising, but in 105 possessions, they're in the ninth percentile defensively in points per possession given up. So that's certainly concerning. The one lineup right now that is a big positive is Luka, Austin, Smart, Rui, and Ayton together. That's plus 12.5. Everything else is either just about double-digit negative or double-digit negative. So I think there can be some tweaks made there, certainly, to feed minutes to lineups that are going to be a bit better. But JJ's also right in that this early in the season still, there's going to be a little bit of noise mixed in. Like, who did those lineups happen to go up against? What was that look? What was the context of those lineups being on the floor? That can muddy the water a bit still. But as we get deeper into the season, Jovan, you're absolutely right, because the farther we get into the season, the more that becomes real that, hey, this lineup, and this lineup isn't working. This one is. Why do we need to mix and match? Is there something else that can be done to kind of to make this work? I do think there's something to what you're saying there.
I'll just say I don't think we need 250 minutes to see that the starting group can't defend. Yeah.
I agree with you.
I disagree with that.
I saw you got aggregated yesterday on the trade market.
Oh, man. That was not a fun day yesterday.
So the Lakers are getting Giannis, huh?
Yeah, with the 2026 pick that they can't trade right now.
That they can't trade until draft night. My goodness. That was funny. I saw that and I went, oh, man, he's hating life right now.
Yeah, no, I got to be clear for those who saw it, like I got misquoted on that. There was like an assumption made on what I was saying that straight from the source of Hoops Hype, then it got aggregated out of that. So I talked to Hoops Hype directly. They admitted their mistake. They went back and changed the article and the quote, but then it had already taken on a life of its own. So that's how it goes with the aggregation cycle.
Always fun. I'll throw in a super chat real quick. Can we get a longer than a 2-game stretch with the whole team? No, apparently that is not appear to be in the cards right now. No Ayton tonight, no Reeves tonight. Gabe Vincent now out a week at least, as he's dealing with back issues. So no, apparently the Lakers cannot get more than 2 games together with the whole team. Unfortunate, but what do you guys think? How much of these three guys being out has to do with tonight's game being against the Utah Jazz?
I'm sure that's a decent size part of it. Who all's out tonight exactly?
Ayton, and Gabe.
Austin, DA, and Gabe. Yeah.
Gotcha.
I think part of it too is, the Lakers have just been cautious all season. And if there's ever even like a close to 50-50 call, they err on the side of caution and just hold the guy out.
They got a tough week next week too with Phoenix and Houston. I think they play the Clippers on Saturday. Like their next three games, and the Clippers like they keep losing, but they're in every one of these games. So don't be surprised if that ends up being a pretty tough game there on Saturday night as well.
All right, let's go here. Well, actually, I guess well, let's talk about how do the Lakers match up in the West. Like right now, if we were to start the playoffs, let's get to that topic before we get into our Q&A here and all that. And we need to talk about the big three as well. But if you were to start the playoffs right now, who would you feel like in the West out of the top teams the Lakers would come away victorious against?
So I actually think this is really fascinating because I think there are certain teams that we... So let me just use OKC for an example. Theoretically, what you need to beat OKC is big ball handlers that can handle pressure and that can make the reads through their defense because they do overplay the ball quite a bit. They're definitely like an aggressive turnover forcing style of defense. The Lakers have sucked against that this year, but we've also seen them in years past, specifically last year at the tail end of the year, we've seen them go into a team like Oklahoma City and handle the pressure well and break down their defense, knock down, catch, and shoot threes. Now, obviously, they had Dorian Finney-Smith at that point in time, and he was shooting the ball really well. But the point I'm trying to make is like, I think there are teams like OKC that like the Lakers match up poorly with based on the data we've received this season, but in theory, they can play better than they played in that particular game. I think San Antonio falls under a similar kind of mold there. Like I think San Antonio is the type of team where they have some questionable shooters. They all shot super well against the Lakers, like Steph Castle and Keldon Johnson made what, like 8 threes in that game. But like they're theoretically
threes, I think.
Yeah, they're the type of team that the Lakers should theoretically be able to leave some of their lesser shooters open, go under screens. And then on the other end of the floor have a variety of different size mismatches. Luka did look very comfortable in that game when he wasn't turning the basketball over. So, like, I think San Antonio, Oklahoma City are kind of like that weird wish-washy, like theoretically they're bad matchups based on how we've looked against them this year. But on paper, they're the kinds of teams we have the tools to potentially beat. I think we match up with Denver really well. I think Denver is the type of team where we can consistently pull Jokic up to the level, which is the type of coverage that Luka's just going to cook all day long. I think the most important thing is we can score against Denver. I think that fundamentally makes us a good matchup with them in a way that we aren't against some of the other teams. Houston, I'm really excited to see the game next week. Because the thing with Houston is they are a very good defense and they are very like a very good rebounding team. But they are not quite as fast as they were last year. They have some fast guys. They have guys in the rotation, Josh Okogie, Amen Thompson. We'll see when Tari Eason comes back. But they are usually playing two or three slower, bigger players on the floor at any given time. Şengün is slower. Steven Adams is slower. Clint Capella is slower. Kevin Durant's slower. Jabari Smith isn't the fastest dude in the world. So like they have a little bit more of like big, slow-footed stuff going on. That could either end up being a problem for the Lakers if LeBron and Luka are settling for step-back jump shots all game long, but it also could be something where the Lakers could end up benefiting from their lack of foot speed. They're the kind of team that I don't have a great feel on. I want to see them play. Minnesota, I think we'd all be stupid to pretend like they aren't a problematic matchup after what we saw last year. So really, to me,
and that's the current first-round matchup, 3-6 Lakers-Wolves.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I do think we'd do much better against Minnesota this year than we did last year. They're not quite as deep as they were last year. They are not as sharp defensively as they were last year.
Got a couple of wins already.
And we have a big. You need four out spacing for Luka to kind of manipulate Rudy Gobert in a way that we couldn't last year. So I think like it's kind of bleak when you look at it because you could theoretically say we match up poorly with all these teams but Denver. But in theory, I've seen Luka break down a Minnesota defense when he has a real role man threat. And in theory, we have the big ball handlers to handle teams like OKC and San Antonio. If I had to pick us in any one of those series, I think the only team that I would like feel really good about picking us against is San Antonio and probably Denver as like a coin flip. All those others, I'd probably be leaning towards the other team.
Yeah.
I'm probably a little more pessimistic in the Denver matchup because I think this is the best defense of the Jokic Murray era. Like right now, they're 17th in defensive rating, but with Gordon and Brown on the floor together, they're the second best defense in the NBA. Small sample size, but like I think this could be a top 8 to 10 defense that, you know, to me would probably be the best defense of the Jokic era. But I think to Jason's point, I'm even going to simplify it, at least from my point of view, in terms of, I think it has to be a questionable defense. Like that's the Lakers' entry point into beating a team. That's where I look at OKC is the best defense, arguably the best relative defense of all time. Houston's the top three defense. Those two matchups I do not like. There are physical advantages left and right for both teams. They just play with a certain motor, and they play two big lineups, which I think can give the Lakers some problems. They have been a good defensive rebounding team, but one of the common trends in some of their losses has been getting hammered on the offensive glass. That's what Houston is going to do to them. Like, I'm just imagining Steven Adams clearing out three guys in the paint. I think Houston with the athleticism, the defense, I mean, they're the only team in the NBA who's top three on both sides of the ball, and that's on NBA.com and cleaning the glass. Like, Houston is legit. I still have Denver number two, but you could really make a statistical case for Houston being number two. And I was looking at like the expected wins. They're actually like the only elite team down there in expected wins. They're 16-7, but they're two wins under expected. So you could argue as high as 18-5. But I think San Antonio and Denver are the two I look at, where San Antonio's 14th in defense. A big part of that has been Wemby being out. With Wemby on the floor, they have nearly the same defensive rating as the Thunder. So, like, of course, we know how special Wemby is defensively, but I think the entry point for LA against any of these teams is a sort of shaky defense that they can exploit, and then like hope their defense can be like, excuse me, solid enough. But like, I just look at Denver as like basically a better version of what the Lakers are. They're the best offense in the NBA by a couple points per 100 possessions. They have this continuity and chemistry, and year over year, like they've built something, swapped in Cam Johnson for Michael Porter Jr., like bolstered the bench, and they're just basically like a better version of LA on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, that's where I've got concerns as well with Denver. In addition to, you know, the ghosts of the past, that being, you know, potentially a thing. But Denver, I do think is I dislike the Houston matchup more than I dislike the Denver matchup. But we've seen the way Agreed. It plays out with Denver. We've seen some challenges certainly there with that team. Can the Lakers exploit Jokic? Sure. But there's been a lot of, you know, we talked about that for years. Can you exploit Jokic on defense? And in the end, it may not matter that much. Even if you can a little bit here and there, Denver can get away with having him out there, no problem. And they've got enough defensive players around him. So I look at those top teams in the West, and I do agree, Jovan, that Denver's got a higher ceiling defensively right now, particularly when Gordon does get back into the mix. He's obviously a really important piece for them, especially the way he's taught himself how to shoot threes. That's one of the more remarkable transformations that we've seen in the NBA over the last few years, is him going from being a bad three-point shooter into being one of the best in the NBA. Pretty crazy stuff that he's been doing. So when he gets back, I do think Denver is a tough draw for the Lakers. Houston is a tough draw. Of course, OKC is going to be a difficult one. They can certainly exploit the Lakers. So again, we're probably talking San Antonio. Minnesota, I know they had the edge last year. I think the Lakers are better suited to deal with them this year. But all of this doesn't sound great when we're talking about at least round two. You're probably going to play one of these teams that we're talking about. You know, but the other thing that I wanted to throw out here, and Jason, I want to get your opinion on this. How important is versatility? And I mean, the ability to play different styles of basketball, because I do feel like we look at Houston, we look at Denver, we look at OKC, these teams all have the ability to go big lineups, small lineups. I don't think the Lakers have the ability to pivot their play style as much as those teams do. Is that something to be concerned about come playoff time?
I think as currently constructed, they don't have as many athletic looks that they can go to your point. Like, I think having the ability to put out a lineup, let's say, for example, that they made a trade for a forward of some kind. Let's just call it Andrew Wiggins for the sake of argument. You could see a lineup where they, you know, have an Austin off look, or let's say a Luka off look. And it's like Austin, Marcus, Wiggins, LeBron, Ayton. That would be like a type of athletic kind of two-way imposing physically look that they don't have currently. That sort of thing, I think, is worth mentioning. I think the Lakers have a lot more offensive versatility than they get credit for. So, for instance, like, they can score out of pick and roll better than most teams. They can score out of ISO better than most teams, and they can score out of the post better than most teams. So there's like a certain amount of like matchup to matchup, defense to defense. I feel like they're going to find a way to score. And there's still a continuity thing with the Lakers offense too, where like, we just haven't seen that many reps with LeBron, Luka, and Austin all playing together. And so I think that they have a lot of room to improve there over the course of the season. Where I worry about them as currently constructed is their defensive versatility. They just don't have a lot of defensive looks that they can go to that work. And I think I'd like to see them continue to build out like just different coverages that work, you know, different, whether it's a zone, whether it's like, you know, seeing more aggressiveness on the ball, like a little bit more ball pressure. This is a team that doesn't apply a ton of ball pressure. I'd love to see a little bit more of that. Like just mixing in like different things on defense to try to add as much variety there as they can. But I think the Lakers are strongly suited on offense to handle different opponents. It's more the other side of the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. And that's where you run into some concerns there. That said, I mean, this all sounds negative, right? Like, oh man, the Lakers are in trouble against some of these top teams. You know, they don't have the defensive versatility of some of these groups. They're athletically at a disadvantage, all of that sort of stuff. And yet, to get into our next topic, they still have LeBron, Austin, and Luka. Luka and Austin have been playing some of the best basketball of anybody in the NBA so far this season. You've got a really talented trio that most teams would kill to have, that you're building off of for this group for the time being. Jovan, I guess let's jump into this. How do you feel these three, because ultimately this team's going to go as far as these three guys take them. How do you feel about how the three of them are coming together as a trio so far this season?
I would say incomplete right now, right? Like we just don't have enough of a sample size, I think, with these three. And if we do want to expand the sample size back to last season, they obviously, I thought, were starting to come together toward the end of the regular season. And then it fell apart in the playoffs for a variety of reasons. I refuse to believe that those three on the floor together can't work together. And like right now they have a minus 5.1 net rating. And I just don't like that. That is something that I will push back against in terms of, I just think this group or, you know, that trio in particular should be able to figure it out. I do think it starts with, like, you know, DA. Okay. He's the center, but I think, like, who are you putting in that fifth spot? And probably more so a Marcus, a Vando, a Jake, someone like that, who I think complements those three guys better defensively. Because I think right now, like, that's the clear thing, is the biggest question of the season, honestly. I think, like, forget the rotation, forget the lineups, forget the trade for Herb Jones or whoever. Can you defend at a decent enough level with LeBron, Austin, and Luka on the floor together? And I think that's an open-ended question that, like, right now the signs are pointing toward no. I think, like, I want to reserve some optimism for, I think LeBron is going to physically look different a month from now compared to how he looks right now. So I do want to give, like, LeBron a still, like, easing in to some degree. But that, to me, is the biggest question of the season, of, like, the offense could be the best in the NBA, but if they're still, I mean, they've been a bottom four defense going on now, I think the last 11 games, like, that's the concern, right? Like, if you're a bottom four defense, you have no shot. Like, you're losing in the first round with the level of defense they've been playing for the past, like, 3 weeks. So that, to me, is the biggest question of the season, of, and that's the thing weighing them down right now. Like, the offense has not fully clicked with those three, but it's still been good enough. I think that the Philly game was a big step in the right direction, and that should be the blueprint moving forward of just how they operated down the stretch with those three. But my biggest thing that we just don't, I think, have an answer to yet is, can those three, can you build a coherent lineup defensively with those three, and with it not being like two all defense guys out there with them, right? Like, the Lakers just don't have that personnel. So if it's DA and even Marcus or DA and Vando, is that even good enough defensively? Like, I don't know the answer to that.
Jason, where are you at on those three? Can they get by defensively with the three of them? As noted right now, and again, we're still early, particularly with the injuries to the three of them. But right now, the three of them on the floor together are a net negative.
So I think let's take LeBron's first couple of games out, because LeBron was really bad defensively in the first couple of games. I think especially in big spots, like when the Lakers are locking in as a team, I think LeBron's been pretty good defensively over the last couple of weeks. I think if you take those three plus Ayton plus a good athlete at the three, they're capable of getting to that like middle of the pack level of defense that I think they need to get to. I think there's a bunch of different things to dig into them individually. Like we talked about it earlier with Luka's efficiency, just cutting down on turnovers and trimming some of the fat with his jump shot diet, making himself more efficient there. I think he deserves a decent amount of blame for the lack of rhythm that the trio has had together, because I think he's been a little tunnel vision-y at the start of games. He's gotten a little better in the last couple games, but in general, I want to see Luka invest more in the flow of the entire unit from the start of games. Austin, I think, has been a resounding success outside of the bad games, outside of the floor that he's had. Like, I can't complain. He's taken a gigantic leap as an on-ball shot creator. He's legitimately been one of the 15 best players in the entire NBA to start this season. I talked specifically about how I wanted to see him improve as a catch-and-shoot guy. He's shooting literally 41% on catch-and-shoot threes this year, and he's shooting 51% when he's unguarded, so he's made that improvement that he's needed to make. He just needs to not have the complete and total stinkers every time he goes against one of those excellent perimeter defenses in the league. And as far as LeBron goes, I was giving him a lot of leeway for the first few weeks of this. I'm kind of at the point now where I'm like, in the next week or two, I want to see him start to pop a little bit. Like, he's been on the floor long enough. He's played enough games. I think it's time to see a little bit more improvement night to night. One of the things that I think has been good for him is the complication of the schedule getting tougher and like him fighting against some of these more kind of like brash young teams, I think has gotten him to lock in on the details considerably more. Like, I thought the Phoenix game in the second, third, and fourth quarters was like one of LeBron's sharpest games, just in terms of like just playing super hard and being like locked in on the game plan, because he really wanted to beat Dylan Brooks. And, you know, like, mm-hmm. It's kind of nice to know, like, when he goes up against the Phoenix on next Tuesday, I just feel like LeBron's going to come in ready to play in that game, because I know he wants to win that game. You know, I'm just ready to start seeing a little bit more pop. He's been absolutely deadly in the post. He has an offensive rating over 140, including passes on post-ups, but he's been really bad on catch and shoot threes. He's 7-for-27 on catch and shoot threes this year. That's typically been a strength for him. So I want to see him kind of get back to form in that department. So the long and short of it, there's a lot of good for all three guys, but a lot of room for improvement for all three guys. And I'd argue, you know how I always feel about this kind of stuff. Like, I don't like going after role players. Role players are role players. They make, you know, $2 million. They make $5 million. They make $10 million. They're not the dudes that have the ability to really elevate your team the way that your stars can. Like, if Luka trims the fat and becomes more efficient, if Austin becomes more consistent in the tougher games, and if LeBron gets closer to all NBA level, that solves like 70% of the Lakers' problems. And so that's why I kind of tend to focus on those three guys.
So, Jason, you're asserting that Luka is getting out of shape.
Dude, I don't know what the deal is. If you take his first three games out, he's shooting in the low 40s from the field and the low 30s from three ever since then. He's just, it's super bizarre to see I don't know about you guys. Tell me if you guys agree with this. Is he relying too much on the foul grifting now, to the point where it's starting to affect his ability to make shots?
I think there may be something to that. The foul grifting is obviously a big part of his game. And what gets me is he gets taken out of the game. If he doesn't get the call, he gets frustrated. He's busy. And that's nothing new with Luka, but he's yelling at the officials and all of that instead of getting back defensively when he doesn't get the call that he thinks he should get. But I thought you brought up a great point last show about Luka maybe needing to cut down on particularly the highly contested, and we saw a few of them against Phoenix, step back threes in order to get his game going to a higher degree, and maybe focusing in on some easier shots, particularly when he's taking that step back with like 12-13 seconds on the clock with a hand right up in his face, as he did that against Dylan Brooks a few times against Phoenix. I think that's the biggest thing, is just working on that. But the foul grift, the only thing that worries me about the foul thing with Luka and Austin is, do those calls go away come playoff time? And then are you really scrambling because, oh no, we have to adjust, rather than, hey, we've been playing this style all season, we know how we're going to pivot. That's my biggest concern with the foul thing is, can they throw a different punch when those whistles aren't coming, or does that completely disrupt them? And right now I feel like it's more the latter.
I think we saw that, especially on the road trip where they lost to Atlanta and OKC. I thought it was particularly harmful there, where I believe both those games that there were a handful of possessions at least where I'm forgetting. Austin was out for the Atlanta game, right? But he was back for the OKC game. Yeah, I thought there was a handful of possessions where there was foul grifting attempts, and then there would not be, you know, getting back in transition, and it just would kind of snowball a bit, right? Because it's almost like, you know, people would give AD crap all the time about falling on the ground, right, and not getting back in transition, and like that kind of was a thing with LA struggling defensively in transition. Like I feel like it's been sort of the same of, I think they are accustomed to getting a certain whistle, and when they don't get that whistle and probably won't get the same whistle in the playoffs, that's where they have to figure out like the next level of, you know, kind of how do we overcome this, right? And part of it is just, you know, making some of those shots and getting the defense to react to that. And I think that that's the challenge for them. But I do think there have been times this season with both Luka and Austin, the foul grifting has erred on the side of being a little bit too much.
All right, we do need to get into our chat section. We wanted to make sure that we had plenty of time for that. But first, we're going to give a quick shout out to our sponsor. That is Underdog. They are absolutely awesome. We certainly do appreciate them. Use that code COLLECTIVE. Be right back in 46 seconds. Give it to Jovan here.
No matter what sport you're watching, our sponsor Underdog has you covered this holiday season. When you sign up with code COLLECTIVE and play your first $5, you'll unlock $75 in bonus entries plus an exclusive gimme pick you can play right away. With Underdog Unwrapped, you'll unwrap tons of promos all throughout the holidays. They're kicking it off with a boost for Jake Paul's big fight on Friday night. On Underdog, just pick higher or lower on player stats for a chance to win up to 5,000 times your money. I've already locked in my picks for the week. Underdog is available in most states, including Florida, California, and Texas. Remember to sign up using code COLLECTIVE, play your first $5, and you'll get $75 in bonus entries and an exclusive gimme pick. Thank you to Underdog for sponsoring us.
All right. And again, big thank you to our presenting sponsor, and that is Underdog. They do an awesome job, and we always appreciate it when you guys support the companies that help support us, keep us going, keep the channel growing. And speaking of keeping the channel growing, hit the subscribe button if you have not done it yet. Let's get those subscribers up. All right. Let's get into a few of the questions and comments coming in here into the chat. Denver's offensive system is so efficient, enforcing mismatches, limiting turnovers, naturally winning offensive rebound margin. Do you think our offense can be better than Denver's, and how? Now, we kind of already touched upon this, but Jovan, you were talking quite a bit about Denver's offense. Can the Lakers offense, so I'm very high on the Lakers offense ceiling, can they get to be better than Denver's offense?
I think, like, yes, it is within the realm of possibility. I think Denver is just at a little bit of a higher level than them offensively. And again, it's, there's some chemistry and continuity elements to this, but there's also a shooting element. You know, I haven't checked over, I think they've only played one game since then, but as recently as a game ago, they had five guys shooting 40% or better on threes. And I think that's another element here of it's like their offensive system with Jokic as the hub. And he's one of the more efficient passers and playmakers we've ever seen, especially obviously at the center spot. But then you also have a certain level of cutting and shooting around him. And I think that's a bit of a difference right now with the Lakers, where the shooting outside of Rui has been pretty up and down with the supporting cast. So I think Denver's both ability to take care of the ball, then you add in some of the continuity and chemistry built over multiple years together, then you add in the collective shooting, that to me, I think, is, you know, puts them at a bit of a higher level than LA. Now, could LA get to that level if they make a certain trade or some guys start regressing to the mean, start having career best shooting performances the rest of the way? Like, sure. And obviously, I think just more reps together with the big three, figuring out certain lineups and rotations. I think it's, again, within the realm of possibility, but I do trust Denver's offense more than LA's. And that just might be the only team, I think, that they can't catch. Like, I think they could be the second best offense easily. I just think Denver is at a bit of a different level.
Yeah, I'm ultimately in agreement with that. I think Denver's offense is really, really good. The question is, can the Lakers be where Denver's at defensively in order to get the win there? I know, Jason, you're higher on the Lakers matchup with Denver. Well, how do you see it?
So, like, let's just put it really simply. Like the Denver half-court offense is the best half-court offense in the league, right? They gain more margin on offense because they're a better offensive rebounding team and they score more in transition. But the Lakers, for all their flaws, with Luka turning the ball over a ton and Austin having his bad nights and LeBron not really being close to form yet and nobody really knocking down threes at a high rate outside of Rui and all of the flaws that they have, and they're literally like right up there with Denver at near the top of the league in half-court offense. And so the way I look at that is like encouraging in the sense that I think the Lakers – let me just put it real simple like this. Denver is clearly the best offense in the league, and they are clearly a better offense than the Lakers. But the Lakers have a lot of room for improvement within this season, whereas I think Denver's kind of operating at their ceiling because they've been there for years and they're just kind of this refined, defined thing. And so I think it's more just like, I would argue this is the case with the Lakers in general. The Lakers are 18-7, and I think they are far from playing their best basketball.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think they have another level that they can certainly get to, and we've talked about a number of ways they can get there. Grantway says, Austin Reeves and Rui, is that DeJounte Murray? And Herb Jones? No. DeJounte Murray is still trying.
Like, no.
No, he's still trying to recover his Achilles. He's missing an Achilles
He's not healthy.
No.
you're basically trading two starters for Herb Jones.
Yeah.
And LA's second best player right now.
We right. talked about this idea in our last show, but like, I don't think it makes any sense to trade Austin for anybody that's not the next number two for Luka.
Yeah.
And Austin's already like the 14th best player in the league this season. So like, it's just hard.
If we could add Ellis and Jones, so Keon Ellis and Herb Jones in a three-team trade with Austin Reeves going out, would you do it? I would say no, that doesn't clear the bar that we've set for an Austin Reeves trade.
Agreed. Just like what I just said.
Yeah.
No.
This one said, I love how Jason is truly honest about our three stars instead of just focusing on their weaknesses, strengths of just one of them. He also adds, keep the hair.
I appreciate the hair positivity. I need that these days. It's been a lot of hair negativity. So, you know, I appreciate the support.
I don't know. I feel like we talk. Jovan, is this a shot at you and I suggesting that we don't talk about all three stars' strengths and weaknesses? I think we do. Maybe what we need to
do
talk about them all at this exact same time. Because if somebody is anti-LeBron, for example, and I'm saying something positive about LeBron, if they don't immediately hear something similar about some of the other players, I get a lot of but what about-isms. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Jovan, do you see a lot of that too?
Yeah, I mean, I think we largely see things similarly. I think there's degrees of maybe, like, surprisingly, I feel like Trevor's typically the most optimistic, but when we had the contender conversation, was the most pessimistic. So, like, yeah, we have we're nuanced. We have wrinkles, but I think in general, I think we all largely feel similarly. I don't think we like, you know, when we've talked about the starting group or we talked about the trade market, like I feel like we've all been in similar boats. So, I mean, I guess, again, there's probably degrees of us talking about certain things, maybe more or not, but yeah. Also to Trevor's point, like when I hear Jason make a certain point, I'm not trying to come out and make the exact same point as Jason. So I'm trying to come at it from a different angle, even if I agree with everything that Jason just said. So I think sometimes, based on like how we frame things or the order of who goes first, like we're naturally going to talk about things a little differently.
All right, let's go here. MJ says, are the Lakers recalling Dalton Connect from South Bay? I don't recall if they officially did it, but I'm sure they will. before tonight's game, especially being given that they're shorthanded, because Connect desperately needs 25 plus point game tonight, not for himself, but for the Lakers as a whole. Yeah, I mean, he dropped 30 in his G League performance the other night with South Bay. Dalton Connect, definitely. He needs a heater for sure, no question. And the Lakers could use him, whether they want to trade him or keep him or whatever. The Lakers could use Dalton Connect having that kind of a performance. Would love to see that from him. I would assume that he will be with the Lakers tonight for this game. But again, I don't know. Jovan, am I forgetting? I usually have a pretty good memory with stuff like that, but I don't recall seeing him brought back, but I would assume he would be.
Yeah, they have not brought him back yet, but I would not be surprised if that happens, especially with, you know, they only have 14 roster players. They're down to 11. I assume they'll have a couple of the two-way guys at least. But yeah, I mean, it will make sense. Now, I think even if he does come back, I don't know if he's going to play enough minutes or have a certain role, because already we were looking at, like, there's been a clear top nine, right? Mm-hmm. So three of those guys are out. But then I think based on how JJ has been moving more recently, like Vando is probably going to get, you know, he probably slides in as the seventh guy. Then Adu might get a shot. Maxi actually had some decent moments against Utah in the last matchup. Remember, I mean, he had the game saving block in to on Keontae George to close out that game. So I think Dalton still, even you know, with the decimated rotation, might be a little bit further out, but we'll see.
Oh, okay. I found it. They did recall Dalton Connect and Adu Thur. Okay. They just did it.
I was trying to find it. I didn't see it. Yeah.
They did it a few days ago. That's why I missed it. Okay. So they did. But yes, I'm in agreement. I think that I would like to see Dalton Connect get going, but I don't know. Like, is it more important that they get Adu Thur going? To me, he's the big, if you get either one of those guys to be rotation level, I'm talking about like an eighth or ninth man level player on an NBA team right now, I think it would be more important that you get Adu Thur at that level based on the skill sets of both guys.
Agreed.
I want, like, Adu's athleticism pops, but I think any sort of shift that you give him is more just an investment in his future than necessarily the best option. Like, in the minutes that I've seen him play, he fouls a lot. He gets out of position a lot. He's like any other super young athlete. Like, I'm a big believer in Adu in the big picture as a prospect, but I don't think he's an answer to the Lakers' problems necessarily.
All right, let's go here. Saw an article, Austin Reeves could command $200 million plus to stay in LA. I would trade him for Herb and Trey. I think we talked about that. I don't know where that's coming from, but I get that question all the time. Can you trade him for Herb Jones and Trey Murphy? I get that all the time. Honestly, Austin is the only legit asset LA has. $200 million. I don't know. I don't think that's a move. First of all, I don't know that the Lakers make that move. Depends on how they see Trey Murphy. Do they see Trey Murphy as a legitimate second guy next to Luka? So a lot of that would be an eye of the beholder question. If they see Trey Murphy as that, and you're getting one of the better perimeter defenders in the NBA, or at least a guy who can be in Herb Jones, maybe there's a conversation to be had there. But if I'm the Pelicans, I am not giving up those two guys to get Austin Reeves, who may say in July, I don't want to be in New Orleans. I'm going to go sign over here. See you later. I just don't see that as realistic.
This continues to be the part of trading Austin that I feel like people are undervaluing in terms of, I mean, there's the salary component of just looking at the guys in Austin's price range. Again, we've talked about, like, unless it's a blue chip player on a rookie scale deal, there's almost no, like, player of Austin's experience level in the same realm as Austin. Like, he has graduated into the tier of wherever you want to put him, top 30 player, top 20 player. You know, I think Jason said earlier, top 14. If you're putting him in that conversation, all those guys are making 40 plus million, 50 plus million. There's no one even close to him making 14 million this year. So that's its own thing in terms of, like, the challenge of finding. And again, I would say, like, I think there is a gap between Trey and Austin right now, right? Like, I think last year you could have maybe had more of a conversation between those two, but with the way Austin has played this season, I think there's a notable gap between them. Now, Herb does, I think, close that gap, and maybe that makes it more of a fair trade. But from the New Orleans side, I also look at what Jeremiah Fears is doing, and I'm like, would Fears and Austin really make sense as like the backcourt of the future? Like, I don't know, and I don't really think so. Like, again, I think one of the differences between like Luka and Austin versus Austin with another small guard, aside from just how great Luka is Luka is 6'8", and Luka can guard threes and fours. So it allows you to have a little bit more optionality with how you construct lineups, where if you're putting Austin and Jeremiah Fears together, you are locking into that backcourt defensively. And again, maybe with the right three, you can have a little bit of flexibility there, but I think you're kind of in that like Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland, where it's just like not quite good enough defensively as a backcourt.
I'm so glad Jovan said what he just said about the money. Like, guys, I understand that we all have a bad taste in our mouth because of what happened in that Spurs game. And Austin has had some rough ones in this one, in this season. He's averaging 28, 6, and 7 on 67% true shooting. The dude has 14 30-point games this season already. Or 14 25-point games this season. He has 8 30-point games this season, 3 40-point games this season, and a 50-point game. He has a 50, 11, and 9 this season. To give you guys some perspective, again, he's averaging 28 on 67% true shooting. You know, Steph Curry won a unanimous MVP on 30 points on 67% true shooting. Like, I'm not trying to say he's in that ballpark. What I am trying to say is, like, what Austin has done this year is undeniable. He has elevated to a completely different class of player. And even when you start to dig into it, is it resulting in wins? Yes, he's carried the team to wins even when their stars have been out. He's been good both with Luka, both without Luka. He's been good in his play type data, even if you just synthesize it down to what he's doing on a per possession basis as both a scorer and as a passer. Austin is just entered into a different stratosphere of basketball player now, and we have to recalibrate anything. Like, if you want Austin to not make $200 million on his next deal, you need him to play some really shitty basketball over the next 6 months, and I just don't think that's going to happen. So, like, he's just entered into a different class, and it's undeniable. Like, guys, like, if you think Austin is bad or if you think he's a role player, you're looking at a dude who's dropped 38 times, who's dropped 25 14 times, who's dropped 43 times, who's averaging 28 on 67% true shooting. These are not things that you can just shrug off or thumb your nose at. This is a completely different level of basketball than the majority of players in the league ever reach.
Jason, what do you say to the people who say, but the defense? Because I think that's an interesting conversation with Austin Reeves, especially when we look this year. Right now, according to Cleaning the Glass, the Lakers give up almost 8 points, 7.9 points per 100 possessions less when Austin Reeves is on the floor compared to off. Now, that can be muddied by lineup data and all of that. And people will see De'Aaron Fox hit a spin move and kind of leave Austin in a lurch and then hit a shot over him. When is he as a defender? Has he improved? Is he a good defender? Is he a bad defender? I see so many ranges of opinions on that.
I think most guards in the league are bad defenders that are stars. Most of them are. I think that Austin is in that class with like Steph or Shea as like a guy who's turned himself into an above average defender for two reasons. One, even though like every guard you say, oh, this guy can get picked on in switches. Every star guard in the league gets picked on in switches. Teams hunt OKC, teams hunt Shea, teams hunt Steph, teams hunt every single star guard in the entire league because that's just what you do. You attack the smaller, less athletic player, right? So, like, yes, Austin has his certain physical limitations that he deals with in those situations. You want to know why the team is better defensively when Austin's on the floor? Because he's an incredibly sharp, like, game plan defender. He's always in the right spot. He does his job. He makes sure he accounts for his man crashing in box out situations. He tracks shooters well when he's on a shooter. Like, Austin is not a mistake-making defender. And that is the kind of stuff that the Stephs of the world and the Shays of the world have done to become above average defenders. Every time you see a guy get hunted on, guys, like Steph Curry is literally going to go down as like a top 10 player in the history of the sport. And every time anybody ever plays the Warriors, they attack Steph in action. That's just what happens to guards in the NBA. That is the way the game works. Austin gets attacked. He holds up pretty well in those situations, and he's a very good off-ball guard who like scraps for rebounds and makes the extra rotations and boxes out when his man's crashing. Like, to me, Austin is very much a class of defender among guards that you don't see often from shot-creating guards. Like, I think he's an above-average defender at his position.
Yovan, where do you stand on the Austin thing? I have a theory, and I just want to throw this out there, and that's that when Austin gets beat, he gets beat in very loud ways, and that helps contribute to this overall idea that he is this absolute turnstile as a defensive player. For example, the numbers for him are very poor when he's defending in the paint and at the rim. And so a lot of those attempts are going to come off the dribble. He gets broken down there. He gets beat to the basket, and that's where he can struggle. We see him as the help defender rotating occasionally along the baseline coming over to challenge, and he's not much of a challenge there. Yet the numbers are much more favorable to him defending on the perimeter, where it's not as loud if he's doing a decent job staying with his man and then contesting on a shot behind the arc. Where do you stand on him? And do you think there's a little bit of validity to the idea that when he does get beat, it's in a loud way, and that contributes to this?
100%. I'm going to bring up a name that I don't think has been brought up on our show yet, but I'm going to bring up Marc Gasol. And this was a big gripe of mine going back to the 2020-2021 team, where statistically, Marc Gasol was actually, like, the Marc Gasol AD combo was and this graphic, I think they put it on Spectrum several times, but like looking at 80 at the four next to the different centers he's played with throughout the years, the 80 Marc Gasol combo was actually the best defensively in terms of defensive rating, better than Dwight, better than JaVale. And I thought Mark got unfairly blamed a lot because when Marc Gasol would get blown by on the perimeter, it would stand out and it would go viral and people would clip it and be like, hey, Marc Gasol can't defend. But they would not be clipping it when he makes a sound rotation and is just, you know, being taking up space as like a 7'1", 280-pound dude with like nimble feet for his size. And yes, he was obviously aging into a different point of his career in his mid-30s, but he was a very sound and technical positional defender who, again, was not taking a bunch of charges or blocking a bunch of shots, or like his defensive success was not loud, but the Lakers were much better defensively with him on the floor compared to him off. And again, some of the lineup data with him and AD, what was more positive than even the season before, with JaVale and Dwight, when that was an elite defense, obviously. So I feel like with Austin, it's the same thing where we'll see, okay, you know, Austin gets overpowered by Jaden McDaniels or Julius Randle in the Minnesota series, but then you look at some of the lineup data with that. You look at the individual data against Ant. He did the best job of any Lakers defender against Ant in that series. I don't think he gets credit or acknowledgement for that. But like, I think with Austin, it is because he's 6'5", 200 pounds, he can be overpowered. And there will be the times where someone, you know, is just able to physically, like, even go back to like Team USA, right? Like I think it was a Lithuanian forward where they just kept spamming like post-ups and mismatches against Austin. But JJ recently talked about Austin's defense and, you know, was asked about like, what are you seeing with it? And I'll just quote JJ here. He said he has one of the lowest blow by rates on the team, and that like Austin's strength defensively is keeping guys in front of him. And I think that's more of a guard trait than it is like a wing or forward trait, right? Like against certain guys, he can be undeniably overpowered. And that's also one of the downsides to how much the Lakers switch. But in terms of actually keeping a guard in front of him, go through the years and some of his matchup data with like a lot of the top guys in the NBA, he's had really good performances against Shea and Steph and De'Aaron Fox. And like, it's not every single matchup against those guys, but I do think because he is physically limited to a degree, people will focus on the highlight play where he gets beat. But there's the other three or four plays where he just does his job, and those aren't as sexy. Those aren't as viral. And for like, that doesn't really get factored in when people talk about him.
That's you're on the money with all of that. When people say we get too defensive of Austin Reeves, that we're too supportive, that we don't call out his negatives and things like that, I think we tend to give pretty honest opinions. But I see different players, but a similarity in how people perceive. And I love that you referenced Marc Gasol. I see it in a kind of a Danny Green-esque way. a Avery Bradley-esque way, the typical 3-and-D guys, a Dorian Finney-Smith style where sometimes the things they do well don't really pop off the screen and don't necessarily show up in the stat sheet. Now, Austin Reeves isn't really in that category because he does have these big statistical games, but the things he does well on the defensive side of the ball isn't as loud. And so then it's on us to highlight those things and talk about, hey, this is why the numbers show up the way that they do, even though he got, you know, burned on this play by, you know, this ultra athletic guard or a big physical, you know, Julius Randle or whatever. So
he's also leading the NBA in charges drawn this year. Mm-hmm. Like really?
Go ahead.
No, that I was just going to add that in of like, there is actual, like outside of, he does have the best defensive rating among the starters, which we can say there's some noise with that. Sure. You know, depends on what lineups you're in, but he, like, there is an actual statistical category that does matter. Like taking a charge is, you know, getting a stop there. He leads the NBA in that. So I think that's also worth noting too.
The thing with the like getting targeted versus like the big picture defense, I think a good counter example of this is Anthony Edwards. Like Anthony Edwards is an example of a player that I've been really disappointed with defensively over the years. And once again, this season, the Timberwolves defense is like dramatically better when Ant is off the floor versus on. And you go back to like the Dallas series where like he says he's going to guard Kyrie, but then he can't fight through a screen at all. And so he just gets cooked by Kyrie the whole series, or like brutally bad off-ball defense in that series. Luka torched Ant for helping and getting caught standing off ball with out of a defensive stance in that entire series. If you watched Anthony Edwards guard on the ball, you'd be like, oh my God, this is one of the best on-ball defenders I've ever seen in terms of just one-on-one, no screen, you versus me, let's play basketball. Ant's obviously going to do amazing at that, but Ant is incredibly undisciplined in almost every other facet of defense, which makes him, at his position, a bigger defensive liability than a guy like Shea and a guy that hasn't been able to reach his potential relative to his athleticism. I remain optimistic that as the years go by, as Ant gets into his late 20s, he'll become a guy who's a very good defensive player all around. But right now it's like, I remember that was a big fear of mine in the Warriors series as we went, it ended up not mattering because Steph got hurt. But like, I'm like, Ant is going to get lost on so many of these switches and loose shooters throughout the, like, and that's the thing. Austin is nowhere near the level of like overall defensive potential of a guy like Ant because he doesn't have anywhere close to the athletic tools. But like Austin's just really good as a team defender. He just is. But if you leave him on an island one-on-one against really good players, he does better than he gets credit for. But that's certainly going to come with low lights like that De'Aaron Fox spin move where he gets left in the dust because he's just given up a lot of athletically in those situations.
This is also quickly, I'm just going to make the final point. Like, this is a roster construction issue where Austin should not be guarding Shea and Steph and De'Aaron Fox. Like, yeah. This is because of the Lakers roster and also the starting group and how they've structured it, where Rui has to guard the best wings and Austin has to guard the best guards. And ideally, you can bring in that fifth player who could do both of those things, right? And that's like the Herb Jones, where Herb Jones, when you play OKC, you're putting him on Shea. When you're playing the Warriors, you're putting him on Steph. When you're playing Denver, you're putting him on Murray. Like, the Lakers need that defender, and I think it'll make Rui look better defensively, and I think it'll make Austin look better defensively, because those guys should be playing more off of the ball against secondary options, not the primary guys.
Agreed. 100%. Agreed. Okay. We went way into overtime. That's my fault. We got, you know, into the weeds of the Austin Reeves conversation there. But I have a few super chat questions. I'll do a little bonus show sometime before the weekend, probably tomorrow after the Jazz game. So we've got that on the books. We'll get something out there on that and address some of these super chat questions as well. But appreciate everybody joining us. If you have not done it yet, please make sure you do hit that subscribe button. Again, super chats we didn't get to, I'm saving them. I'll put together an extra show and we'll get that out there to make sure that they do get answered. But again, hit that subscribe button. Guys, this was awesome as always. Appreciate it. And yeah, thanks so much for being here.
Of course, it was great to see you guys. I'm looking forward to the Monday show. A couple of interesting games there. The Jazz won on the road. I heard Lori's out, so that won't be as big of an issue. But the Jazz at home are just always more feisty than they are on the road. So that's going to be a little bit of an interesting game. And then every time the Lakers and Clippers play, it's fireworks. So that Saturday night game will be fun.
Yeah, looking forward to the weekend, looking forward to next week, and appreciate you guys. Appreciate the chat. Shout out, everybody.
That's right. That's right. Thank you, everybody. Till next time. See ya. And stay safe.